Okay, so in the spirit of this conference, I hope this would actually be a discussion about what string theory can teach us about the state of the universe and what we can learn from the universe about string theory. And in the context of the late, not the primordial universe, the early universe as in inflation and so on, but in the late epochs, late meaning the last 8 billion years. Okay, so what I'll do, I really want it to be a discussion, and on the other hand, I want the discussion to be a little bit more structured, focused, than the one that we had last time about this issue, the what is causing the acceleration of the universe with the vote. Just to make things a little bit more interesting. Okay. And so I'll try to remind you briefly what the standard practices in cosmology are, the so-called standard model of cosmology, which is really a way of a parameterization for interpreting the data. And then, since Sean is not here, I wanted him to do what happens beyond the standard model. And so I'll do it instead of him. And then Tom will kindly agreed to discuss briefly what perspective from string theory, and then the floor will be open, and I'm sure all of you have opinions on this issue, so you're welcome to express them. There will be two rules. So, a word, not allowed until 2:30. So from 2:30 and on, you're welcome to use it. And the same. And possibility four, we don't have. You want to change the time?
This was with the new schedule.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. 1 hour.
And we don't have a clue. That was the landslide winner of the vote. Again, is blocked until 2:30. okay, so let's.
The rest of us will leave.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I should add no biting, but everybody here is civilized. So, okay. So let me. Yeah, so you have 45 minutes to, it's enough, it's really enough time. So, okay, so let me remind you what the standard model, so-called standard model is, which is what the cosmologists use to interpret the data. They use 3 plus 1 GR, flat lambda CDM model. And there are additional assumptions that I don't write here, but this would be the relevant for us. Then you can write the, I'm using units 8 pi g newton equals half, I guess. So, and h dot is minus a quarter rho plus b, and a dependent equation, which I will need later on, where T, the subscript T stands for the total composition. And when we say lambda CDM, we say that omega lambda, flat lambda CDM, it's omega lambda plus omega m, which includes the usual dark and visible matter, is equal to 1. And what they do is they take results of observations, and they fit to this. It's about 10 parameters. And when you do it today, you get these 10 parameters to about 15% accuracy, more or less. And in fact, the number of parameters is chosen to give this precision. And you can see that the number of parameter increases. It's not an unreasonable procedure, because getting parameters to 50% is not very meaningful, so you restrict that. On the other hand, it is problematic. So let me now very quickly go.
Yes. If you had more parameters which you were fitting, you would be able to improve.
No. No. What happened is that I will show an example. What happens is that if you add a parameter to the fit, the accuracy of all the others decreases by quite a lot. So that's one point. That's the way. It's a very special to this situation. And the other point is that to do fits like that to the cosmic microwave background, it takes weeks. To run a program that makes the fit takes weeks. So if you add one more parameters, it would take months, and two parameters, years, with current technology.
That's so, I understand that. I don't think you grasp why if you can add more things, you can't improve.
No, what? But so this is in fact one of the points that I want to make, so that we can have a meaningful discussion. And in fact, that's where, so the situation now is in fact that the theory or assumptions about the parameters that you fit to determines the results. And I want to show an example. And that's why theoretical input is so interesting and important. It becomes a practical question.
Yes. Will you tell us what the parameters are?
Those that I wanted to tell you, I already told you. They are here. And there are additional, there is, in fact, it's power law. So it varies. So you assume something about the spectrum of initial perturbations. You assume 3+1 dimensional FRW, cosmological constant, meaning dark energy with an equation of state of -1.
Because there are parameters, for example, that are a little bit murky, like how the observable matter traces the dark matter.
No, that doesn't quite. It's true that there are many additional parameters. There are many additional parameters here, but I want to focus on that. We can discuss that perhaps later.
What data are you including in these fits? Are you talking about structure formation? And
everything.
Yes.
That's so. For example, if you look at the fit that the Sol Perlmutter did in the last supernova paper, what they included is their own results. They include the cosmic microwave background. In fact, one point from a cosmic microwave background, I can say more about that, and one additional input from the last case structure, which does rely on some other parameters, but let me focus on this.
And what about supernova
properties?
Well, that's they in this case they use.
Do you put
no? Yes. Oh, but okay. They assume this type of.
No, I understand.
Yes.
I
mean, yes. Yes. Yes.
Question is
yes. Yes.
Data
so
do.
I said that in the paper of Sol Perlmutter, which analyzes supernova, eventually they add in so okay. Supernova, everything.
That, alpha.
Yes. All of them they use FRW models of this type. You make a fit, and you come up with a result. That's how it's done. And this is what's called the standard model. Now, let me turn to ambiguities in the standard model. What happens is, and this, so this kind of goes under the name of cosmic confusion, or degeneracies. And so on. So to understand this, what happens is that when you make the fit, you see that there are many ways that you can change the parameters that will give you approximately the same result. And the reason for that is actually very simple and fundamental. And for that, that's why I need only these parameters. The reason is that all cosmological observations rely on collecting light from distant sources. So when you do that, the light travels through the universe. And therefore, it integrates over the history of the universe. And it's sensitive only to the total composition. Again, I will show a very, very quickly an example. So integration in total composition. And let me give you an example of how this works. So for example, a quantity that supernova measure or cosmic microwave background measure is called luminosity distance. It's the square root of luminosity to flux. And this is in an FRW universe. It's given by 1 plus ZR, where R is the R that appears in the line element. Okay, there's a 1 plus Z because the universe is expanding. Typically, this would be 1 over R, R, but here there's 1 plus Z. So let me now calculate this R. So R is integral dr, and this is integral dt over A. And this, you can work out, is integral dz over h of z. So because dz is minus dA over a square, and h is dA dt. So this is the first instance that you see that what you measure is related to an integral over H. Now, suppose you want to relate that to a property of the total expansion. You can do it by integrating the conservation equation, so Dlan rho plus 3 Dlan A. Let me write it like this, rho 1 plus wt. Wt is pt over rho t. So this means, right, that I can now write it like this, Dlan rho is minus plus 3 Dlan z. 1 plus WT. So rho over rho 0 is e to the plus 3 integral d ln x 1 plus WT. And this is equal to h square over h 0 square. So when I plug this in, I get an additional integral over the total equation of states. So what, when supernova measure, when they measure luminosity distance, they measure a double integral over some parameters that we're interested in. Yes?
So, of course, many things involve this, but say if you're looking at correlations between two points in the sky, like in the microwave background, in what sense is that falling into this category?
Okay. In this case, what they measure is, in fact, it's a power of Z. I forget what it is. I think it's this one. So for example, positions of peaks in a cosmic microwave background are angular distance, and angular distance involves that also. And if you look at, for example, object counts, so suppose you had the information that there was a uniform distribution of some objects, and you now count them, and from that want to deduce, that's actually r squared dr dz. So all background observation include, depend on r.
Various types of observations, which use sources at vastly different distances away from us, then I think you can break the degeneracy to a large extent.
Hold on and see what happens, okay? The answer is no.
The catch-22 of cosmology is that if you look close, you get rid of that, you are not reliable. If you look far, you always have to do that.
But I'll answer this. This is, in fact, one of the key questions now. And one way of breaking the degeneracy or trying to get a good hold of measurement is, in fact, to try and combine different kinds of measurements. So I did it for background quantities. And the answer, I can show you the answer. I wasn't planning to, but maybe later on. And with that, you don't get that much useful information. Then there are additional fluctuation probes, which are not known at the moment. So, but this is for background probes. This is a quantity. All of them depend on this quantity, and therefore it depends on various multiple integrals of quantities that we want to know. So that's the source of degeneracy. So this is one source of degeneracy. The other source is that it depends on the total equation of state. So for example, suppose we want to know something about the dark energy. So in this case, you can, for example, look at the total equation of state, so WT PT over OT. And so let's assume, just for simplicity, that it's only dark matter and dark energy. Of course, you could have others, but this was enough to illustrate this. So this is like P Q, PM is 0, divided by rho Q plus rho M. So this is, I divide, so it's rho q plus rho m divided by rho q. So this is wq omega q. So if I arrange, assuming that the universe is flat, so if I change both quantities such that the product over a region of redshift is approximately the same, I will get the same measurement. So there are two kinds of degeneracy, and you see them actually, if you look at the likelihood analysis, you see both of them very clearly. And this is something that cannot be removed by making the experiment better. It's a theoretical, it's of theoretical origin.
Is this 15% error coming from there, or is
this? No, this is without taking this into account. This is. So, yes.
By the way, concerning CMB determination of omega lambda, that's very much dependent on the prior for omega
that's,
flatness, right?
This, in addition, if you add now a possibility here to have a curvature, then the space of degeneracies becomes even stronger. So let me show you, in fact, it's partially answers
your. There's a paper by Sarkar and some people claiming that you can just barely, by stretching everything, get an omega 0.3 universe. So matter only, no cosmological constants. And that is marginally consistent with the data if you put a break in the power spectrum.
This, well, I don't, it's hard to assess the statistical significance of that, but it's clear that there's lots of freedom. And this is one way of seeing this.
Sorry, can I ask you a repeated question? The word prior is often used. What does it mean?
Okay. The prior, for example, so this is, in fact, I can use this transparency to explain this. Okay? So this is a plot of nine. So these are universes that have dark energy and dark matter only, assuming flat and assuming that the dark matter density is absolutely known, fixed completely. So that's a prior, right? Then, right. So the prior is the class of assumptions that, so for example, what's the so-called standard model assumes lambda CDM, flatness, Ripple's one GR, and so on. And Now, so here, for example, so this is graph showing, assuming that you measure this luminosity distance to 1% up to z equal to 2, which is an optimistic estimate of what can be done in the future. These, all these equations of states produce the same luminosity distance for the dark component. Now, if you assume a prior that the dark energy equation of state is a constant, then the range of determination shrinks to this few percent. So this is a very nice example of showing how the assumptions you make on the parameterization determines the result. And I have one more, and then we'll go on to the to other subjects. So what you see here is that there are various possibilities. This is the integration type degeneracy. I haven't included here the composition because I fixed that. So, that you can still not see in supernova results because they are not accurate enough to do this, but the other type, the composition, you can see. And this is typical to all cosmological measurements. The assumptions that you make, the priors, determine the result. So it's very important to know what this assumption is and to choose a good one. And that's why theory is important. And let me show one more example of this kind of thing. So this is a fit to a model with a high variation of the equation of state. Again, dark equation of state, and dark and omega m and in matter, and the true model, the true universe that was used to produce the fake data has a very large equation, a very large variation in the equation of state. Now, if I analyze it, assuming that the dark equation of state is constant, I get this type of contours with a very negative omega. In fact, this is a W. This is, in fact, what you see in the, it's very similar to what you see in current supernova data, except that the errors are much larger. Now, if you assume that the equation of state of the dark energy has to be larger than minus one, you get this. So you're very happy. You have measured the dark energy equation of state to a precision of 3%, and it's a cosmological constant. But the truth is very different. And I can go on and on with this type of examples. And again, it's a theoretical, there is a theoretical reason just looking at the integral of dl that explains that. Okay, so that's it for the degeneracies. Let me switch to the case that either Mark Trodden or Sean, do the part that Mark Trodden or Sean were supposed to do. It's going a little bit slower. So now, given this state of affair, you might want to ask, or in general, what is beyond the standard model? Should we stick with this or do something else? So beyond the standard model, you can actually, if you look, it's easiest to, I guess, let me put this equation, the Friedmann equation. And erase that other stuff. So here, beyond the standard model means changing the assumptions, the priors. So you can change this side, you can change gravity by adding higher derivative, so change gravity, higher derivative, lower, meaning negative powers of derivative. We've seen examples of all of that. And in fact, you can count, probably there are by now hundreds of papers doing that, or maybe at least 100. Then you can change row here. You can postulate row goes to row square, row goes to row plus p. Again, all were done and in quantities. I share your reactions, but just to set the stage so that you can comment on that. Row goes to row to the alpha, et cetera, et cetera. You can change G Newton, make it G Newton of phi, G Newton of k, G Newton of t. K is the wave number. I believe what we'll hear about this, a few talks about that next week. And okay, so the 8 pies, I guess you can't really change. although probably soon we'll hear about it. It's probably higher dimension. In higher dimension, is it still 8 pi? Okay, good. So the 8 pi, okay. Excellent. So that's also fair game. Now, the generic problems with doing this is that, well, either you mess, so.
But running is what people on outside do. But there are other things that people cosmologists do.
Yeah, I'm going through whatever changes. There's actually a very nice review of the possibilities that Sean put yesterday on I think AstroPH, listing the different possibilities of changes. And and again, here I'm completely neutral. Don't deduce from my tone any attitude towards that. okay, then you can, so changes with changes of gravity are surprisingly hard because GR, believe it or not, is measured very well. So whenever you mess with GR, typically you run up against experiment. And typically, these type of corrections fail when compared to one of the experiments.
Can I ask you about the row goes to row plus p? That's one I find particularly interesting. And so you would think that must be ruled out by something. But do you know?
That's, for example, in this review by Sean, he says that this is ruled by BBN.
That's interesting, because he wrote a paper.
Well, he's not here, so.
He didn't actually consider that model, which is one that he himself proposed.
Okay, well, so maybe later you'll say something about that. I have no particular preference or to this. I'm just listing it.
One of the ones that is surprisingly impossible to kill again is this Valle et al.
I know, that's an exception that I do not know.
Have you looked at it yet?
I know, but I sort of know that it's hard to kill.
Although it's possible, factor of 10 and lunar energy.
So that's the one that perhaps is single one.
The cosmological part of this has two branches, and they choose a branch that doesn't smoothly as it goes to the black case.
The cosmological equations that kills are higher polynomials.
So there are two sines
from
the h squared.
This is h to the fourth, right?
Right. And The one they choose is the one that takes a flat lane, it doesn't go flat.
What is it going to?
Something.
Something.
I don't know if you can take it, but it's decision.
So.
Because I think the back end that contributes is coming from the curvature of the frame.
I don't know exactly. Right? It would be nice if you could.
That's bad okay. Theory, but certainly unusual.
Well, that we need something unusual if we want to explain that is sort of clear. So the question is, at this point, is whether it's ruled out by one experiment. And typically, the surprising thing is that these changes, although they seem benign at first, they get ruled out consistently by experiments.
Well, certainly, there's no way you could rule out rho plus p based on nucleate synthesis alone, because it depends on what's the coefficient.
Can you explain better what is rho plus p? I mean, you cannot just change an equation.
No. So
why not? Gabriele, the standards here are sometimes a little bit lower than you are used to. Kill the contribution from a cosmological constant that has rho plus p equals zero to the expansion. So you kill the constant.
So you explain why there's no cosmological constant.
Okay, that's another story. You want to understand why the cosmological constant is small has nothing to do with the data.
But if it was this way, that would be telling you that it must be quintessence, because pure cosmological constant would give you nothing.
Okay, so let me go. We can discuss that later. This was supposed to be just. So then you can do changes to matter, which is add other fields. Now, again, here, so let's look at the simplest model, adding a scalar field. Well, then you see that m squared needs to be h squared. So this field is dynamical. If m squared is much larger than h squared, it's already sitting somewhere, or fastly rolling, which is, if it's massless, it's frozen. Massless in the sense that v double prime is zero, because of these two terms. So m needs to be that in EV is 10 to the minus 33. EV square, and again, no. This is the next one, which is V, needs to be similar to rho c, which is 10 to the minus 3 EV to the 4. So you need two conditions, right? And again, typically it's very hard to get that. You run into fifth force. So these are light scalar fields that typically couple with gravitational strengths. You run into fifth force constraint, and you can try and get away from them, for example, by saying that the scalar field couples only to dark matter. Then you don't have too many constraints on that, and so on. Okay, so again, it's surprisingly hard to have this, and Tom will tell us more how even more surprisingly hard it is in string theory. So in general, changes are surprisingly hard. That's the total message. And now it's your time. I intended it to be very brief, but somehow.
The basic thing that you can imagine coming out of string theory, let me first back away from the idea of a cosmological constant of one sort or another, and the kind of thing that when people first started talking about these ideas of non-cosmological constant dark energy, immediately pops into your mind as well. There are all of these moduli fields, and they could be the quintessence. And then when you start to think about that and try it out, it doesn't work. And the reasons that it doesn't work are partly these phenomenological reasons that Rami discussed, that having scalar fields like that, particularly in the context of string theory, where you know something about how they couple to stuff, and so you just can't make arbitrary assumptions, you very easily get into phenomenological problems. But there's an even more serious general problem, okay, which is that in the most natural thing, in some sense, would be to assume we were out in a generalized Dein-Seiberg region of moduli space, where the scalar fields roll, and they naturally roll to a place where the cosmological constant is zero. And the problem is that in every single region of moduli space under which we have control, the following is generically true. That if you write a, in terms of a canonically normalized scalar field, you write down the potential that you might get from string perturbation theory or 1 over R corrections. The moduli we could be talking about could be the string coupling constant going to zero, the radius of some compactification going to infinity, all of these various non-compact moduli that we know about in string theory. And all the corrections that you can dream up that might give rise to a potential for those things have the general property that if I write things in terms of a canonically normalized scalar field, then the potential falls at least as fast as an exponential with a certain bound on this parameter alpha. Okay? This, I think the first example of this was in an old paper of Rami's with Paul Steinhardt. They talked about the dilaton, but it's a very general result in the regions of moduli space we know. Now, if you've ever thought about the equation of motion of a cosmology dominated by a scalar field with an exponential potential, you know that the exponential potential is the marginal case. Depending on this parameter alpha, you either get into a potential-dominated regime where you have acceleration and you could have something like quintessence, or you get into a kinetic-dominated regime where the potential is totally negligible, the scalar field acts like a completely massless scalar field, and in four dimensions, the energy redshifts away like 1 over 8 to the sixth, much faster than radiation. You get no acceleration at all. String theory always predicts alpha, at least in those regions that we know about, bigger than the bound. We never get acceleration in those regions. Okay.
You're saying that there can be no constant
in this potential? No constant. Yeah. Not out at infinity. We know that in the limit that these parameters go to infinity, we get a supersymmetric Poincaré invariant vacuum state. So this is like it's the canonical example. You take heterotic string theory and think about the limit where the string coupling goes to zero. Think about the potential for the moduli in that limit. And then when the string coupling is zero, you know that the ground state is degenerate and completely supersymmetric and has zero cosmological constant.
In fact, there's an even more general statement, even without supersymmetry, if you're talking about the rolling size of the extra dimensions, even if you say have a positive cosmological constant in the higher dimensions, you still trail off to infinity. And that's actually the limiting case, if I recall, where you actually do get acceleration if you have a higher dimensional cosmological constant. But you can make the generic argument that you always have to fall off given any sensible physics in the higher dimensional context. Supersymmetric or not, it doesn't really depend on supersymmetry.
What I'm not understanding about what you're saying, Steve, is where in string theory do I get a higher dimensional positive cosmological constant?
Well, okay.
If you just put it in, I understand what you're saying.
We're thinking about theories of gravity, so we could talk about things more generally in string theory.
Okay, sure.
I think
Rami was asking me specifically to say what we know about really existing models in string theory about this problem. Okay, so that's one class of things. Yeah, sure.
The fact that I know from experience that the coefficient always turns out such that we don't get acceleration. Is there some?
I have never been able to come up with a general, you know, argument that made it obvious. Okay, it's just you check all the examples you know, and they never work. Okay, so. It's 3 root. It's something like square root of 3 or square root of 2. Yeah, yeah. Of course, this is all important. Excuse me.
Would you have some, like, just asking from phenomenological point of view? Could you have some corrections, like prefactors of polynomial type, which times? I mean, for example, a polynomial times.
No, if the thing falls off this rapidly, then you'll always be in the kinetic dominated regime. The polynomial is not going to help you, I don't think. If you
he means dying
of the polynomial. Okay. Mm-hmm. Could you get pi e to the minus
L? The question. But even well, if you did, it wouldn't help. In most of these contexts, I can't imagine that you could, because phi is already something like this would be like having a log of the string coupling constant in a potential and stuff like that. So it's not usual, but I don't think it would even. No, radii also.
What I'm using is that if it was a parameter that is such that you would get acceleration as a string theory solution, it would be rather interesting, because it would mean that in the far future you would know what observables are. Yeah. See, the fact that the universe would be accelerating forever is a serious problem of what we observe is in the far future. And so maybe it's self-consistent. I don't know.
Yeah, so what Willie is saying is that if we're really working in string theory in a regime where we think we know how to calculate with it, then the observables are the S matrix. But as Willie and his collaborators and Lenny Susskind and his collaborators showed, if there's acceleration with the W's that are necessary to explain the data, there is no S matrix. There's no observable like that that you can actually construct. So that might be, you know, philosophically, that might be the reason. But I don't have any, you know, mechanical hands-on argument that this had to be like that, except you just try all the examples. Okay, one other possibility. This was the first time I ever heard Paul Steinhardt give a talk about quintessence. I suggested this, and we went to the board and calculated, and it didn't work. There are certain compactifications of string theory or M theory in which you can convince yourself there are some really, really light moduli. So the typical way that this happens, I'll tell you a very particular example, but the typical way that this happens is that string theory has many antisymmetric tensor gauge fields of various ranks. And when you compactify, components of these can become axion-like fields in four dimensions. And the potentials for those axion fields are always generated by, they can only be generated by effects coming from instantons due to brains that couple to that tensor field wrapping various cycles. And then in various compactifications, you can convince yourself that many of those contributions, those instant contributions, are very, very small. So the one that I'm most familiar with is if you think about Hoare-Javel-Witten compactification. So I have a compactification of 11-dimensional supergravity, which is a Calabi-Yau manifold times an interval. And then I think about the three-form of the three-form of 11-dimensional supergravity, and I think about components of the three-form where two of the indices are going along some cycle in the Calabi-Yau manifold. So it's something associated with a Kähler modulus. And the other one is going along the interval direction. Those give rise to axion-type fields. There's always one of them, at least, corresponding to the overall volume modulus, and if there are more Kähler moduli for each Kähler modulus of the Calabi-Yau, you get another field like this. And the potential for these fields can basically be generated only by the membrane contributions to it are totally negligible. They have to be stretched across the large Hoshava-Witten interval, and so you can get five-brain contributions to the potential, and you can convince yourself that there are scenarios in which all of the contributions or the dominant contribution to the potential will come from five brains that are lying inside the brain where the standard model lives. And what those are, in ordinary parlance, are instantons of the standard model gauge group. Okay. And then if you've done an appropriate breaking of the gauge group down so that QCD is the strongest of the gauge groups in the anywhere on the standard model brain, the heaviest of these axions becomes a QCD axion. And the next one gets its mass from electroweak instantons. So that's a terribly small number, and you might say, aha, we're going to get quintessence from that. Well, it comes close, but it doesn't work, okay? You do the calculation of the e to the minus 8 pi over alpha over g squared weak, and you get too large a mass. The mass is not as small as the Hubble constant today. And so that doesn't work, and then anything else has a mass that's much, much smaller than that, and therefore acts like a massless scalar field and wouldn't be contributing to the dark energy in the universe, in addition to the fact that it would give us various phenomenological problems with everyday experiments. It just wouldn't contribute to the dark energy. So because these contributions are always exponentials in small parameters, if you get close but miss, then the next one is likely to be too small to be of interest, and that's what appears to happen. So I have studied less, in the sense that, you know, odd compactifications of this type, where you stretch out some dimensions, there are many ways you could imagine doing that, and obviously nobody has studied them all. And so I could imagine that we could come up with a flux compactification where there was a scalar field whose mass, you know, precisely hit this bound. That would be a way to get a form of quintessence in string theory.
It's probably quite proof of it's a pseudoscalar.
It's important for these.
What's happening for the fifth force? What for the fifth force?
Oh, for the fifth force, it's very important that it's a pseudoscalar. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's very important. But these things naturally are pseudoscalars because of the
yeah, this of course. Not
okay.
What you said,
I think it's a general comment that it's better to have a pseudoscalar than
absolutely.
A scalar if you want to go.
Absolutely.
That's right. You have really to decouple it.
Absolutely right. That's right. Right. So the natural thing to look for is something that people always call these Goldstone bosons. In the string theory context, the things that act like Goldstone bosons, there are no Goldstone bosons because there are no global symmetries, continuous global symmetries, except Poincaré invariants. But the natural thing that takes the place of that in string theory are these axions that come from anti-symmetric tensor fields, because they are similar in the sense that they're massless scalar fields whose mass, which are derivatively coupled up to effects that you can often calculate in a weak coupling regime, because they all come from certain instanton effects. Okay.
How much did you miss by a talk for the electron?
I don't remember. It was you know, enough so that you were convinced it would not work, but it's orders of magnitude. I think it's, sorry? Not necessarily. This is not a lepton number violation or something like that.
And
yeah.
What type of scale are you giving? Are there no scales for this calculation?
Sorry?
You have an exponential small factor, and you have a scale to calculate the mass.
It's an electroweak instanton. You use MW to the fourth. Okay. It's the standard electroweak instanton calculation. Imagine you have a scalar field which is coupled only to FF dual of the electroweak gauge group, at zero temperature, you calculate, you do a Tufts calculation of the...
That is too big.
That's too big. That's too big.
Sorry, Tom, where did the neutrino zero modes go?
Sorry?
The neutrino zero modes, where do they go? You have to soak up all the zero modes.
Yeah.
You're talking about the random masses for the neutrinos?
Just the usual neutrinos.
Usually, yeah, but those are included in this calculation.
That's right.
The question is, why isn't the mass
zero? Why isn't the mass zero in this approximation? Okay, I'm not sure I can answer that question on my feet.
Yeah, you mean it will be like the usual action if the force mass is zero.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, this will not be pretty, but I don't see why we can't bring up a gauge group designed to give the right mass. I mean,
That's something you could imagine doing. You could imagine working up a scenario, try to have an as yet unseen, okay, nothing in the standard model couples to it. You know, maybe it's on the other brain or whatever in Korshava-Witten, and a weakly coupled gauge group that is, you know, spontaneously broken and so on, so that its instanton contributions are not big. You could imagine cooking things up like this. So there are directions like this that one could go in string theory. I'm thinking about Scott's question, and I still can't find the answer. Okay. So finally, the other thing that has recently, I think from the very beginning, the simplest answer to this question was always, it's a cosmological constant, okay? We just, you know, have to live with that. And what's interesting is that thinking about the cosmological constant in string theory, we've sort of come to a bimodal way of thinking. There, on the one hand, you can try to imagine a situation in which there is a cosmological constant that's really constant forever, and that's the way the universe will always be. That's a situation which I would claim very strongly does not fit into conventional string theory. It corresponds, perhaps, to a modification of string theory, which is a quantum theory with a finite number of states, and maybe is close to string theory in the limit where you take the cosmological constant to zero. And then more recently, there's been a discussion of metastable de Sitter vacua, which you can try to cook up by looking at various kinds of string compactifications, and in particular, flux compactification. By the way, it should be noted the cosmologists were there ahead of us. Andy Albrecht and his collaborators had invented the idea of a metastable de Sitter vacuum as quintessence before any of this work was done in string theory, and that it's a little bit nasty as a form of quintessence because it looks just like a cosmological constant. So as far as the data is concerned, you'll see a cosmological constant, and the difference between it and a cosmological constant is going to happen on timescales much longer than the current age of the universe, and so we're never going to know, apparently. Okay. So those are really, it seems to me, the two most plausible explanations in current theoretical thinking for what the dark energy really is. One of them, I think that they both are things that we don't really know exist. We don't really know that either of these solutions is really something that exists in the same way that heterotic string theory on a Kolopiow manifold exists. Well, heterotic. Sorry. Okay. Type 2 string theory on a Kolopiow manifold. Okay. That one I would claim we know exists. But I don't think that the either the metastable de Sitter vacua or the stable de Sitter vacua are things that we really have solid evidence for. But these games with axions as quintessence are things that you can obviously play, but the thing that's always bothered me about them, and now we can really open up the discussion because this is just religion and a matter of opinion, is there's this fundamental problem of the cosmological constant. And the data shows you it's there. It seems to me to go searching around for something that's going to explain that data without actually addressing the fundamental problem of why the cosmological constant is zero is not the right way to go. Okay.
So with this, so, let me just write three questions. One of them is that, any other people want to ask questions, that's fine, and then we'll open up.
Can I ask a minor question before? Can you answer, is it in any sense different from your point of view from standard quintessence?
No, I don't think so.
It's the same.
No, you're just saying quintessence with modified kinetic term. Yeah. In from the string theory point of view, there are always modified kinetic terms because you're on moduli space and there's a non-trivial metric on moduli space. But we can calculate it, and it doesn't help you to get, you know, acceleration. So in the regions of moduli space where we do have rolling scalars, that's of no use. Mm-hmm.
What's
that?
Okay, so So first question that I propose, but you are welcome to discuss whatever and express your opinion, is it reasonable to do what the from a point of view of fundamental physics or string theory, is it reasonable to do what the cosmologists to assume a standard model, which is lambda CDM, you probably missed it. Lambda CDM, flat lambda CDM, do the fit, and call the result around our universe. Second is that's actually, as you saw, you see, if you change the number of dimensions, that changes the result. So it's a practical question. And the second question that I propose to discuss is ideas from where we heard that, but you're welcome to express yours, and in particular, it's important to me at least. I would like to know what you think about whether the dark energy is constant or quintessence or some dynamical, other dynamical variable. And then the third question is, do we need to solve the cosmological constant problem to understand dark energy? There, it's really different because, as we were just heard, for example, there could be many solutions to the cosmological constant that we can parameterize in the same way. So, and
to solve the CCD, explain why it's small.
So I
think there is one thing that's certain. You have to solve the cosmological constant problem. Whether this will explain that, that's a completely different matter.
Well, I mean, so is the floor open for discussion?
Yes, of course. And I know that some of you have want to express their opinion in more detail, and you're welcome to do it as time allows.
I think if you do take the landscape seriously, then you should at least entertain the possibility that there is no living cost solution to the cosmological constant if there are various possibilities. I think we have to now start at least allowing for that in string theory.
It's after 2:30, so you can say the word.
I'm not saying it. I don't know why the landscape is equated with anthropic. I mean,
I guess it's after
two.
You can imagine that there's a landscape and there's still some dynamical mechanism that chooses what's happening, right? So as you say, you can separate them, but it's very hard to identify the dynamical mechanism. So they would be both.
At some point, we'll have to decide whether will we ever be able to decide whether it's a cosmological constant or it's a metastable de Sitter. Asymptotic de Sitter space time or a metastable. We can't wait that long. If you think of the landscape.
We can induce the decay.
That's it. Very nice.
You mean LHC?
But really, from the point of view of
trying to decide what to do with the data, that question, whether or not it's an isolated minimum or there are many, it's in some sense irrelevant.
No, conceptually it's very different.
Conceptually it is, different. But the point is, see, while you are arguing about this conceptual point, there's data accumulating. It becomes better and better, and the cosmologists do what they do. They say that it's a standard model and that they don't care about them. So the question is whether or not you can have any input into that process. This debate is something that will go on anyhow.
Given the ambiguities, the sorts of ambiguities you cited, is there a reasonable model with zero cosmological constant but something else that...
I think there, I was told that Shankar claims that if he fiddles with the percentage of the dark matter tracing, general matter tracing the dark matter, then you can get rid of the cosmological constant inside the Earth.
Well, this is the paper I was mentioning.
Sir.
Where they live with an omega in this point.
Right. You also have to put a break in the spectrum of punctuation.
And you have to take a very low Hubble parameter. And the sigma 8, I think. You have to push everything to really extreme limits to make it fit.
So it may turn out that it's some you know, experimental results that we know now are wrong, or their central value needs to be shifted quite a bit. But now, in terms of accelerations, for example, the issue is much more delicate. Because the measurement is actually of WT, the total equation of state, and typically it's a measurement of WT at a Z of 0.3 or something like that. That typically what happens, this integral is big around that.
And what's the maximum?
That's the maximum sensitivity of many of the experiments. So what happens is that this, if you look at that with the current data, that's marginally above the acceleration. So that there is more room to go. But I think the fact that there isn't, the fact that there is a component with negative pressure, for example, not necessarily a cosmological constant, is you can argue quite easily within GR because you know that galaxies are formed, and you sort of know that the total density to date is larger significantly than omega matter. So you need a component that was negligible in the past, and it's dominant today, and that needs negative pressure within GR. It's an argument that was used before the supernova. So the question is how negative the pressure, and that's the quantitative pressure. Yes,
you've emphasized that there are a lot of degeneracies, and you've given some examples. But it is possible eventually that certain hypotheses will be tested. For example, once, maybe before, and at least after we get the SNAP data, it could be that just a constant vacuum energy is inconsistent with the data.
Yes.
So you can, although there'll always be degeneracies, you can test certain hypotheses.
That is absolutely true. In fact, but for that you need large time dependence. So the best case, for example, an example where that can be done is if the acceleration is very recent. Let's say it started at Z of 0.15. This means large time dependence in the dark equation of state. That, in fact, can be differentiated from a constant. How reasonable this is, right? An acceleration that started at 0.15 is an equation of state that changes very rapidly. So you need to design. It's hard to see how this would fit into a fundamental physics model, but
I know examples that don't seem so extreme that you can distinguish them. But in principle, I think you agree it's...
Such as what?
I can just take a minute and address these phenomenological problems. So, given that it's possible in principle to to test whether the vacuum energy is constant or not, Demopoulos and I asked the question, suppose they come and tell us we know for sure it's not constant. That would be rather shocking to most of us. And is there any way to accommodate that? Or to have a scenario in which that could make sense to people like us? And so Tom discussed from the top down how hard it might be. We just thought about it from the bottom up. And let me just remind you about what some of the problems are. Tommy mentioned that, well, first there have to be some very small parameters. So let's assume that it can be parameterized by some modulus and just think of it as a vacuum energy that's changing in time in some way, parameterized by some field. If they're all small parameters, why are they quantum mechanically stable? Why don't quantum corrections destabilize these things? And also, why aren't there long-range forces due to these extremely light fields that essentially stretch out the whole way across the universe? So here's a answer. I don't know if it's a unique answer, but if you had a Lagrangian of this form, so if phi is the dark energy modulus, where the wave function normalization for the modulus is very large now. Okay? And so we didn't want to have any small parameters at all, so we imagined some potential that, well, its magnitude may be less than the 4D Planck scale, but other than that, we don't want to tune any parameters, so we parameterized it in this way. So it has some range of order the Planck scale. And its magnitude, this may be the whole way up at the Planck scale, or it may be as low as the TeV scale. But beyond that, we would consider tuning of the underlying.
But Scott, isn't that just a way of producing a flat potential?
Yeah, that's
Scott. I mean, that just redefines
my. Yeah, I'll come to that. That's right.
Scott, what you just said about the TeV scale, do you mean take the potential down to the TeV scale, or you take this parameter m down to the TeV scale?
So I mean that this whole thing here is TeV to the 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, sorry.
But you have to write something similar for Z, right?
What's that?
You have to write something similar for Z.
Something similar?
Like
Z is just a large
Z is a large, maybe it depends on phi, but it's large.
You look at natural expositions for the potential and not for Z.
Right. I'm just from the bottom up asking if there's any Lagrangian which is quantum mechanically stable that would allow such a thing. And so now we don't want to assume any special properties of F, so just assume that it has some simple zero somewhere. And so clearly we live very close to the zero. There are lots of places which don't match observation very well, but that's okay. We know lots of vacuum that don't fit observation very well. Lots of reasons.
At this level, you can absorb Z and redefine M.
Sure,
right?
Of course, so you can define a define a canonically normalized field. Mm-hmm. Yes? And of course, that's mathematically equivalent to just thinking of a canonically normalized field having some very large range.
Actually, that's upside down.
The streets or something.
Doesn't matter, but it works. Correctly.
So that's like it having some very large range, and that might seem unnatural, but we prefer this way for a couple reasons. The first is, if you write it this way, it makes it clear that you only need a single large parameter. I should just say the physics is that if this is very large, the kinetic inertia of the field's very large. So even on a generic potential, it rolls very slowly. Okay. Whereas if you had thought about a canonically normalized field, you might have guessed that you needed a large number of small parameters in the potential. So here's clearly only one large parameter.
So how does that give you large time variation?
I'll show you in a
second. Okay.
The other thing is that we have in the back of our mind, although we don't have a good model for this, that Z might be due to infrared physics. But at the fundamental scale, it's some number of order 1. And it only arises from infrared effects. And we know things sort of like that in supersymmetry. Superpotential isn't normalized, but the Kähler potential is. And when you're near a conformal fixed point, so if a modulus controls how close a conformal fixed, or a operator which drives a CFT away from, to some, say, free fixed point, then it turns out the wave function normalization can be power law large. And you can build toy models in a supersymmetric. And it would be a function of phi in that case, that's right, yes. Now, that's not exactly this, and again, I don't have a model to do this, but this is an effective Lagrangian to do that. So in that case, questions of very large ranges, or if quantum gravity affects breaking the approximate shift symmetry that would enforce this, very flat potential up at the high scale wouldn't apply. So we don't have a model of that, but that's another reason why we have a backward line to write like that. And the other thing that's interesting is you could say, well, okay, that's fine. So z is big enough, and if little n here is the Planck scale, z clearly has to be 10 to the 120. If this whole thing is TeV to the fourth, this has to be 10 to the 60. So it has to be a large number or a small number somewhere in the problem. The interesting things are following, though. With this form of a Lagrangian, you can ask with z of something of that order. It turns out that the field doesn't move fast enough to probe anything in the potential beyond the linear term. So in other words, you can look at if you power expand the potential and ask how much the nth derivative contributes, then higher than beyond linear order are down by additional powers of root z. And so it turns out then that the only part of the potential is relevant cosmologically is just the linear term.
But isn't this exactly what Linde says?
Linde likes. Yes. But there's no reason. You could have. Now, see, in addition, this is a useful way to write it because you could have required that the potential be as general as possible, consistent with technical naturalness. In other words, that it doesn't destabilize itself with respect to quantum corrections. And if you do that, then this is actually more restrictive. Then the higher order terms, then these would all be of order one. And in that case, it's not predictive because you need an infinite list of parameters. So in the sense of a quantum field theory, this form for Lagrangian is actually predictive. There's one parameter. It's some combination of z and the slope here. And so there's one parameter family of predictions.
I don't understand. So if you can write a W prime, why don't you be able to probe this let's say, second order?
I don't understand the question, sorry.
So presumably you can measure the equation of state at different redshifts.
So let me just show you that. Let me show you what the prediction is. This is what the scale factor looks like as a function of time. So since it goes through, eventually it rolls down to negative potential and collapses. So here's this single combination of parameters it depends on. If you make the simplest assumption that z is a constant, then eventually it collapses. So if the parameter is order one, then it collapses in a few Hubble times, the way it's been normalized. And then you can look at the equation of state. And again, this is for some fixed omega dark matter. Now, and so in the past at large z, the large z factor, the seizing of the kinetic term is very efficient, so it doesn't move much, so it's basically close to a cosmological constant. And then if this number is order one, then it changes.
But these changes are very small.
Okay, so let's see. So here's what it would look like in the data. So this is the magnitude, for example, in the supernova is a function of z relative to a lambda CDM cosmology, the flat line, for these various parameters. So if it's some number of order 1 or 2, then you could measure the deviation. And if it's some very small number, then you won't be able to measure it. As you just see, the SNAP satellite, they claim the systematic uncertainty per supernova will be about 0.02 in magnitude, which is about one tick mark here. But they'll have thousands of measurements. So as a whole fit to a functional form, it's the uncertainty is a few thicknesses of one of these lines.
I'm just confused about what you're saying here. So you say you take z to be this huge number in order for this thing to mock up a cosmological constant, and now you're trying to get a model that just doesn't quite do that?
Well, this is for different values of the z.
Yeah.
Here it is. In units that are picked such that if it's just beginning to roll now, it's of order one. It's been normalized with the vacuum energy now.
Yeah, I think the answer to Tom's question is yes. He's trying. So there, most of the range of parameters is simply a constant, and then you can tune it so that it moves.
So if z is significantly smaller than 10 to the minus 120,
universe would have collapsed a long time ago. If it's significantly larger, it'll last, it'll enter into
the
center phase.
There's a regime where you can get anything you want, but I still don't understand your argument. So let's say, what we double prime you assume here?
What, I'm sorry, what?
So you are saying that the measurement is only sensitive to weight prime, single, so the first derivative of weight.
But you
didn't actually plot what is the second order derivative you assume here?
Zero. Because in this model, it's zero, yes.
But in order to test the sensitivity, you need to plot the.
Very good. So to actually test this model, what you would presume, let's presume the model's correct,
right.
You would see the data is very close, it's consistent with linear, then you would ask how well can you bound the second derivative.
Right.
Okay, very good. And so that's, and so I'm doing that now, and it looks like it could be bounded at a few tens of percent of the problem normalization.
Scott, let me point out, this is actually, I understand what you did, and in fact, this is another example of this. The theoretical importance, the theory importance of that. Because here you have a model with one parameter that we know can be measured by the data. But suppose that you don't know that this is the model, and
absolutely,
you want to try and find, is there another model that will be as good a fit to the data as this one? You'll find many.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to have a good reason look at this.
I agree. So you make predictions and test those predictions, but as you said, unfortunately, there'll always be degeneracies and somebody could come with some crazy potential
but
that they just drew.
For example,
data.
For example, if string theory told us that the dark energy is a constant by some principle, this would in fact be much more effective than sending the SNAP satellite to the sky, because today, if we knew that, really, no, I'm talking in terms of practical terms, because today, if we assume a cosmological constant, we know its value to 15%. So in that sense, theory actually has a, at this point, the major source of error, and it certainly will be in a year or two, the major source of error are theoretical assumptions. So if you can come up.
I don't think anybody here is going to convince the SNAP people.
No.
Or the funding agencies to give us the money.
Did you consider the case with the linear terms vanishing and then you're dominated by the quadratic?
No, because that would be a tuning of the potential. So a double zero would be a very special property of the potential. So we wanted to consider a general potential.
I did too.
No, but there's no.
I looked at the various kinds of potentials and the parameters that you can measure.
A double zero requires both the first and the second.
You have to look at the other terms because you can always remove the linear term by a shift.
No, but I'm just the only assumption is that the potential went through zero somewhere. If it goes through zero somewhere and Z is large, then you can focus on that.
Once you fix the place it goes through zero,
it doesn't mean that the full functional potential doesn't have
I suggested. I suggest that maybe we should postpone the continuation of discussion of the model of this particular model and go more.
Right now, the document which looks like is
missing. Yes, Gabriele.
The only thing I should say, there's no long-range forces from this either, of course, because there's a 1 over z in the property. So it does address all the usual.
I insist on my right to set z equal 1.
You're free to do that. You're free to do that, but if you had done that from the beginning, I challenge you to notice all the properties that we did when we put it in the connector.
I just set z equal 1 on that graph.
They're mathematically the same, but they're not psychological.
There are other examples where you might stabilize this form.
Related to the specific?
Yes, it's directed to this
specific. So maybe we can postpone that and continue the discussion. Then we can. Are there other people who want to express their opinion?
I want to just as a general point. I mean, I think theoretically the main alternative which looks to me is confronting us is whether there is or there isn't a very light particle. Okay? For instance, to the landscape people, the question is, suppose you have a vacuum with a tiny cosmological constant. Do you know what is the mass there? Is it of the same order as H or not? So I, because it's
unrelated to the Carl Mudger.
It's big. The mass is big. It's big. So I think this is really the dividing line. I mean, that is like a cosmological constant, and as Rami was saying, if n is over the range or smaller, then it's a different story. I mean, it seems to me these are the two main theoretical alternatives, and it's very interesting for us, say, to know whether string theory predicts that there is a light particle or not.
You were arguing from that the heavy option is preferred.
It seems to me that the heavy option, we at least have, you know, some ideas about how that could come out of sort of things we've been thinking about in string theory. The light option, as I mentioned, there is one possibility, and it looks a little bit cooked up to me, and I'm uncomfortable with it primarily because, you know, you cook up a string model that does that, you won't simultaneously solve the cosmological consequence.
On the other hand, probably if the light option is correct, we may expect not only variations of that, the equation of state, but maybe also variations of other things like fine structure constant or...
No, not if the light object is derivatively coupled.
No, that is true.
If the light object is coupled to F mu nu squared, then there are quantum corrections to its potential that don't really let it be quintessent. I mean,
so you would say, for example, that string theory would prefer either the heavy option or a light derivatively coupled scalar field?
You
had a different view.
Some time ago we worked on a model where you could try to decouple even a scalar, not a pseudo-scalar, but a scalar, so non-derivative couplings, but, okay.
What's this model of this idea of Tupac?
Yes. Well, that's right. Actually, I have some transparencies too, but I don't want to share your time. It's a variant of the model of Damour and Polyakov, okay, in which instead of insisting that there is a zero for these form factors like z, you know, at some specific finite value of phi, you assume that there is a finite limit to these form factors as phi goes to infinity. And phi goes to infinity is where you roll and
to
where
this
you
z.
inflate. Yeah, this z and others. And then in this limit you can show that you decouple a la Damour-Polyakov, the scalar particle. And yet it can play some role of quintessence provided it is coupled to dark matter.
So it decouples from all the observable matter.
I mean, what was really about the Damour-Polyakov thing was that their module was called the delta.
Yeah.
Which one underlies
that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So did you ever look at that? Does that work? Is that ruled out?
It's ruled out.
Well, you mean
their proposal.
Their proposal, I don't think is, you mean, is ruled out as a model of quintessence or as a model of decoupling the dilaton? As a model of decoupling the dilaton, it works, I think.
I disagree.
But it is kind of fine-tuned because you have to have that all these form factors vanish exactly at the same point. Now, there was a hope that maybe by some S-duality and so on, there would be a special point for the dilaton where naturally all these form factors had a stationary point. Now, what the game we played with him and with Piazza recently was to take this other attitude that maybe string theory makes sense in a regime where we don't have control of quantity, which is this large bare coupling limit of the theory, assuming that somehow, you know, loop corrections produce acceptable values for the renormalized Planck mass, renormalized gauge coupling, and so on, and that there is a finite limit. And if you play that game, you can do something. But I mean, it's not particularly, you know, impressive.
So,
but you can achieve a few things.
You decouple the field from the stuff that we observe, but don't decouple it from dark matter.
That's right.
Because, okay, if you say, for instance, the lamp, you know, what is lamp that you see? Okay, lamp that you see, or the
because otherwise mass, it will not be dark energy. If it decoupled completely,
it's something that
nothing
can
decouples from gravity.
Oh, it could be dark energy decoupled.
And the beta function of the theory, okay, to say the spin scale and the half
the
constant.
They needed it to be coupled.
Okay. Sorry?
You need it to be coupled to dark matter.
Yes. I mean, in this model, yes, we do couple it to dark matter in a non-trivial way. Yes.
Why is that crucial? I didn't understand.
Well, it is important in this model if you want to achieve the following, that the quintessence field, by coupling to dark matter, makes for a possibility of accelerating the universe while raw dark matter over dark energy remains constant. I mean, this
is explaining the coincidence.
And why do you want that to be?
It alleviates a little bit the coincidence problem. Because, I mean, I can
you can't have model where
let
dark
show
energy
just
is
one
much bigger than dark energy. Dark
matter. I'll show you what happens in this model. And if you are curious, then you come and ask me about more. But I mean, this is
rather strange things that happen in this model, okay? If this rho phi is the quintessence dilaton, okay? This is radiation and this is matter for the time being, both dark and baryonic. Then what happens are three different regimes. The dark energy first is redshifted away like 1 over 8 to the 6. Then it is attracted at T quality to some value which is of the same order as the other energy densities. There is a very interesting focusing regime in which rho of the dilaton goes like rho m, rho matter squared of rho r. In other words, the matter density is the geometric average of radiation and this quintessence field.
What kind of interaction does this focusing?
It's just the fact that you introduce this dilaton couples to dark matter. So the conservation equations have an extra term. It's no longer true that rho dot m is simply 3h minus 3h rho, but there is also an extra term which is the coupling term, because it's not general relativity. Okay, so you have this violations of the equivalence principle in the dark matter state. Now, the other interesting thing is what happens after equality. After equality, this rho phi remains tied up to the dark matter. And after the potential, and that's where the coincidence problem is not solved, okay? You have to play a little bit with the parameter in front of the potential in order to have it appear to be important. Just lately, okay, at 0.1. Then from here on, the dark energy and the dark matter again, you know, follow each other. And you see, you can remain with an omega quintessence of order 0.6, 0.7, a fixed one, and still accelerate. Okay, this is the acceleration parameter, a double dot over a divided by h squared, which can be of the sort. However, in order for this to happen, you have to violate quite badly the equivalence principle in the dark matter center. Otherwise, you don't follow each other. There is a fifth force which is quite strong in the dark matter center.
So dark matter couldn't be the equivalence.
Well, okay, unless you say yes, that somehow the neutral, no, cannot be supersymmetric partners, of course.
What
did you say? Perhaps some invisible acts or some
like
this.
The mystery of the dark matter.
But this has become a very but I mean, I don't like particularly this model. I'm saying what you can't understand is,
you know, in the original de Moivre-Poulenc model, there was this problem that you wanted many functions to vanish at the same point.
With very good accuracy. The accuracy was important.
And unnatural fine tuning.
Yeah.
here, I understand you're trying to solve that by sort of saying, oh, there's some
they
infinite
all go to
region
constant.
Where everything goes to a constant.
Oh, right.
And
which is looks
but,
a little
but,
less.
But it then seems peculiar to say there's this special field called the dark matter field where the coefficients don't go to constants.
I agree that this is this is why I don't particularly like. And we say that explicitly in the paper. I mean, somehow, well, that would be the distinguishing feature of dark, of
and,
dark matter.
And the reason you need that is in order to get dark matter and dark energy to be about the same order of matter.
And to keep tracking each other.
Right.
And so that would make it more plausible why the ratio is of order one. I mean, this was the aim. But when you really put numbers, it's not obvious. And you can see from here, well, I didn't explain the symbols, but I mean, this region, which is a good one, corresponds to a rather large violation of the equivalence principle.
So have you looked at things like the dynamics in galaxies and clusters
People have tried to make some studies. It doesn't seem to be completely ruled out to have some violations of that. What is very difficult is to find a rationale, theoretical rationale for saying, I mean, this dark matter candidate has this unusual behavior. Furthermore, it's even worse than that, if I have to be completely honest, this coupling of dark matter has to turn on rather late. Yeah, because otherwise here this phase gets a little bit screwed up. So there's another coincidence, if you want, that this coupling to dark matter has to turn on late. I mean, or to become strong.
That's because of its back reaction.
Yeah, otherwise you spoil the evolution of the universe between equality and now. So these are the kind of things you can try to do modifying general relativity in the like way of making assumptions.
You are the organizer.
It's already cooking time, you know?
Unless.
Okay, I think we have to get out of here.
Okay.
You could probably get your inducing the faculty to be gay so we could observe it funded by us on the remote. I was thinking of getting her to pay not to do it. I mean,
that's yours. Right? Yes. Well,
then you'd be one of the terrorists.
Don't you guys feel on the